Welcome to Smashing the Plateau. My name is Nick Parks, and I'm with the Microfame Media Network. Today, I'm going to be interviewing David Schreiner-Kahn as we continue with our mini-series, Fire Your Business Coach. We're going to be talking about coaches and how you can spot the warning signs. So David, when dealing with a coach, how do you avoid a business model that creates a conflict of interest?
Some ways to do that are to be clear as the client going into the relationship on what your expectations are for the outcome from the coaching. Are you looking for specific quantitative results, or are you looking for qualitative results? How would you measure those results? Are you looking for a bump up in sales? Are you looking for a bump up in net profit? Are you looking for greater employee engagement? Are you looking for a change in your customer base? Are you looking for a change in your own business model? You're looking for a coach to help you change your own business model so it can be restructured. There are a whole host of reasons why one might, as I've mentioned earlier, there are a whole host of reasons as to why one might hire a business coach. And frankly, I think the more specific the need is, probably the better one person is going to be at giving you a solution if you're looking for a single business coach to try to solve the problem. Then once you determine what your expectations are, how you would measure the results, and when you'll measure the results, then there's the issue of, well, how does the coach price his or her services? Is it an hourly rate? Is it a weekly, monthly, quarterly, annual fee rate? Is there some kind of relationship between the coach's time and the amount of money that's charged? Is there a relationship between the value that is delivered by the coach and the amount of money that's charged? If one of your expectations is, I want to increase sales by 50% in the next 12 months, is there a coach who's willing to charge a percentage of the increase in sales as opposed to an hourly fee, so that there's a sharing of the outcomes as opposed to a pricing that's based on input of the coach's time?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because it seems like it could prevent a wrong decision from day one. I mean, I think it could be pretty easy to just kind of feel like, oh, I need to hire a coach. I know so many people who are hiring coaches. I've heard good things about this coach. But, you know, at the end of the day, if you're experiencing a sales problem, then maybe a management coach, that might not be the right fit at the very beginning. I think having those goals and kind of having all that out front could pretty much set you up for success before you even begin in a lot of ways.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I think it's very important to know what your expectations are and how you would measure the results.
Do you know of any coaches who kind of work out those other models, who work for maybe a percentage of the sales instead of an hourly rate or maybe a monthly fee?
Yes, but the people that I do know who use those kinds of models typically don't market themselves primarily as coaches.
Yeah, that seems like a really good way of doing it, because then they are very interested in your success.
Right. It's sort of like the commission-only compensation model for salespeople.
And to an extent, it might be a learning curve. Maybe you're learning these new tactics from a good coach, and it may just take time to grow in this area where you need growth. And then there comes a time when maybe you realize it's just not working out. Do you have any signs that someone should look for that should let them know, hey, this just really isn't working out? I'm not growing in this area. I'm not seeing progress.
Yeah, well, it goes back to what your expectations are going into the relationship. So if your expectations are that, let's say you've never managed a team before, and as your company grows, you have to hire other people to work in your company, otherwise the company's not going to scale. Right? So suddenly you find yourself with a team of 10 people, and there are all sorts of problems. The employees are coming in late. They are not cooperating with one another. There's a lot of backbiting. They don't seem to be that productive. And you're wondering how you can fix these problems. So you hire somebody who's great at team building to work with you on developing a great team. So at the outset, if you set the expectation that I want to be able to measure an improvement in performance of the individuals in my team and of the team as a whole, and I want to be able to measure the change that takes place after 6 months. Let's say you have a survey that you want to administer to the employees at the start of the coaching relationship, and then maybe after 4 months, so you can see how it's going and see whether you're getting an increase in positive results from feedback from employees. What you could do is you could have a regular check-in with your coach, say once a month, where you are going to discuss whatever, even though you haven't performed the survey yet, you can discuss some informal feedback that you've gotten from your team members, discuss it with the coach, and evaluate how well things are improving or not improving, where there are bottlenecks, and also discuss as part of that what benefits you're getting from the coaching relationship and where the coaching relationship may be falling short in your mind. And you should look to get the same kind of feedback from your coach. The coach should also evaluate the relationship and give some feedback on how well you as the client are learning new strategies and tactics and how well you're implementing them and how well you're taking advantage of the coach's knowledge and the coach with the value that the coach is trying to give to you. And if you do that once a month, I think you will be able to each month cite ways that the relationship is working well and cite ways that there's room for improvement. And then each subsequent month, make sure that you are looking at the ways that you determined the relationship should improve and see if it is actually improving. Then by the time you conduct the employee survey after 4 months, you're going to get some hard data from employees. And that, fueled with your monthly interim evaluations of the relationship, should set you up for a really good evaluation maybe at the end of the 5th month, and then that'll be a time to start to discuss whether you want to continue the relationship beyond 6 months or not. So it's an iterative process. You're performing feedback and evaluation multiple steps along the way with some soft data and some hard data. And that should set you up to be able to evaluate how well the relationship is working. So it's not just based on your feelings. It's based on data and results.
The example that you use was for a very specific problem. Say you've grown your business. You have 10 people on your team. People are showing up late. There are issues. Would you say that a lot of the coaches that you know of would... So let's say I'm that entrepreneur and I'm having these issues with my team that's recently grown, and I reach out to a coach because I hear, oh, a coach will help me with this problem. I need to hire someone. But say they are a coach who, say they focus on sales. We'll go back to that example because it's not a sales problem that I have. It's a management problem. Would you say that a lot of coaches would have the ethics to say, look, I'm not the right person to help you, but I can steer you in the right direction?
Some coaches, yes, will have the ethics to then hand off the coaching to somebody else, and some won't. There are also other professionals in advisory roles who often try to help business owners with management issues. Sometimes accountants and lawyers that have lots of clients dealing with similar kinds of issues have seen many of these kinds of issues and can spot these kinds of problems. But it doesn't mean that in their own practices they have had to deal with finding solutions to these problems. So they may or they may not be in a position to be able to help you solve these problems. And they're used to being in an advisory role where they have answers. So they may or may not feel comfortable or confident making a referral to somebody who can help you solve these team building problems.
Let's say someone follows all of the steps that we've covered. So they figure out what their problem is specifically. They write down what success would look like, what their goals are. They give themselves a timeline. Maybe it's a year, maybe it's 2 years. So like, what's the next step to find that coach?
You can look for referrals from people who may have faced similar kinds of situations, people that you trust. I would strongly encourage you to try out something small with the new coach to see if there's a fit, rather than going into something that's going to be a significant investment of your time and money right from the outset. Because it's, you know, as I said, it's a fit of values, of personalities, and lots of different factors. You should certainly check out the coach's credentials with, just like when you're hiring an employee, you should look for references. You should speak to the references. You should see if the references you speak to have some similarities to you and have faced similar kinds of challenges, and what the solutions have been. You can check out any kind of reviews that may exist online, if there are any. So not just rely on what the coach might feed you in terms of testimonials, but do your own due diligence and your own research.
And I think even just the testimonials is worth talking about, because, I mean, would you say that can be very misleading?
Testimonials can definitely be misleading. Lots of coaches will post testimonials without revealing the full name or contact information of the person who has made the testimonial. You know, and it's complicated because in some cases it might not be appropriate for the coach to release that information about the person who gives a testimonial, and in other cases it is appropriate to be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, even just a couple of weeks ago, for example, I saw a coach, and they do kind of this health and wellness coaching, which I was kind of cynical of, but I just stumbled across it, and I saw on their website the language seemed very similar to that. It seemed very misleading. It mentioned all these. They said that people with cancer and people with all these terminal diseases have gone to these events. But that's all it said about it. It never said that people have seen progress or that they've been healed or anything like that. It just said that people with these diseases have gone to these events.
If you're looking for somebody who's a health and wellness coach, you might not want to be in a room filled with people with lots of terminal diseases.
And it's the same thing. Yeah, I think it's just the same with testimonials, because for whatever reason, I feel like it does have a lot of clout.
Right. Of course it's going to be curated. And social proof is huge. We all look for social proof when we want to try something new. As an example, you ever wonder how sometimes there's a new restaurant that will open and they don't do a lot of publicity. Maybe they don't do any publicity. And they seem to be busy really quickly, and then all of a sudden you can't get a table there. And what's that all about? Well, there's like word of mouth. People are talking about it. They've had a good experience, so they like to share the experience with their friends, and so their friends are hearing social proof that this is a place you want to go and try. Right? That's a really kind of classic offline example of social proof. Nowadays, with social media, it's interesting how when movies open, the opening weekend is like the biggest deal. If the movie doesn't make it on the opening weekend, the movie's probably not going to make it. And it's all based on social proof. The first people who go to see the movie are going to go online and communicate about it, and it like builds a wave. and then a lot of people will go and see it, and there's a lot of buzz, or it's a bust, and the movie, you know, all of a sudden you can get it on Netflix and Amazon and iTunes within a few weeks because they're not able to sell much in the cinemas. Also, if I have a problem that I need solved, depending upon the severity of the problem, I'm going to rely more and more on advice from people I know, like, and trust about how to get it solved. Right? If I have a medical issue that is complicated, and I know that sort of your average physician, particularly if you're like live in a small town, your average small town physician is not going to have the experience to deal with it, or the local hospital doesn't have the technology or the equipment to deal with it, then I want to get a referral from a friend of mine who knows people in a big city with a big city hospital and a big name doctor who's dealt with that, and hopefully I can get somebody to kind of get me in to get an appointment with that doctor. Right? That's all based on social proof. It's not that I've actually experienced going to that doctor, but we know that with really serious problems, those are the places you want to go. You want to go to the big name cancer center in a big city if you have a rare kind of cancer, or an infant with a rare kind of disease. You want to go to the best children's hospital that there is in a city that has a really great children's hospital. Same thing is true with if you're trying to solve a complicated business problem. You don't want to go to like a kind of run-of-the-mill coach who doesn't have a lot of experience. You want to go to somebody who's a real specialist who's dealt with these kinds of problems. So here's one possibility. Has my coach said to me, you know, David, you're just not good at sales. Why don't you just hire somebody who's going to be great in sales? Or maybe you should partner with somebody and create a different kind of model for your business where you're in a partnership role. Somebody who's great at sales, you're good at operations, get a partner who's good at sales, you'll knock it out of the park.
Are there a lot of coaches who would say something like that? Or do you think they'd say, hey, this guy is going to need coaching in sales for a really long time because he's just mediocre at best? Which do you think could happen? Is that something people should look out for? Is that something they're not really going to hear, that honest answer of you're just not very good at this, so you should just find someone who can help you or bring on a partner or hire someone?
Well, I don't know that it's so great for a coach to say, you're not so good at this, why don't you do something else instead? Why don't you find a partner? But the coach can ask some probing questions that might lead the client to be open to making some major changes in the business. So the coach could ask the client, David, when have you been in situations where you've done a great job selling? When have you been in a situation where the company that you're part of has done a great job selling? And that might lead to some discussion about being in a place with some other people who have significant leadership roles, who are good at the sales piece. You know, as either a potential partner, could be that the business owner has sufficient money to invest in a top-notch salesperson as an employee rather than as a partner. But is also willing to give up some of the sales control to a new person. There are a lot of ways to solve this kind of problem. And a coach may or may not be particularly if it turns out that this coach is really good at sales coaching, the coach could be talking himself or herself out of a job, as you've pointed out. So how comfortable does the coach feel? And again, this goes back to the conflict of interest. How comfortable does the coach feel really putting the client's needs ahead of the coach's needs?
Yeah, do you think a community would help with that? So to use a point that you brought up earlier, you know, say it's a coach and they work in a specific field and they encounter the same specific problems with all their clients. And maybe your problem is way over here on the other end of the spectrum, and it's nothing that they've encountered. They don't really know people to even recommend who could solve it. Is a community the ideal answer here? Because people are going to be coming from all different places. Kind of using Podcaster's Paradise as an example again, you know, I think the commonality there is that these are business owners who have a podcast, but you know, I'm sure there are business owners who are great in sales there. There are great business owners who are great at marketing. So I guess that's my question. Is that really going to help with kind of this diverse potential for problems, just being a part of a community versus a one-on-one coach?
Well, if a community member says, I faced a similar situation and it wasn't until I partnered with somebody who was really great at sales that my business took off, that might sound very different than a coach who has never been in that kind of partnership arrangement. Might sound very different coming from a peer rather than from a coach who hasn't had that kind of experience.
I think that's very, very good advice, especially when you just realize the bottom line is you just might not have a strength in that area and you might want to find someone who does have a strength. But I guess kind of on the flip side, where do you run the risk of just jumping to that by default instead of, you know, working hard to build up this new skill, maybe saying, well, I'm not good at that, so I'll just find someone who is. Because there are only so many partners you can bring on. There are so many people you can hire before you just run out of money or equity.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a downside to there are downsides to partnering as well. You lose control, you lose equity, you lose income. And you're right, if you have too many partners, that's problematic. And then you end up spending more time dealing with partnership squabbles than you do trying to grow your business. So I don't know that there's any magic answer or any cut and dry answer. I would say that any solution has potential advantages and disadvantages. But I think when you're in a community, you are exposing yourself to a wider range of possibilities than if you're just dealing with one coach.
Yeah, there's not just a magic answer, but it's just something to be mindful of, it sounds mm-hmm. like.
So, Nick, so the bottom line is you've got to be really clear in your head as the client and be alert to where there is a potential conflict of interest between the coach and you. Look for signs in the pricing model. Look for signs in the length of engagement. Look for signs in how much feedback the coach is looking for. Look for signs in all along the way in the process, and make sure that the conflict of interest is minimized wherever possible. I don't know that you're ever going to be able to totally eliminate the conflict of interest, because you know the coach is in it. It is a business for the coach. The coach has bills to pay too, and the coach has got to be able to charge a fair fee for the value that the coach delivers. But just be alert to signs of conflict of interest, and some of them will be major red flags, and others you should just work to minimize. And you could also, many of them you could negotiate with the coach if the coach is really looking out for your interest and your success as the client, and focused on really providing value and benefit to you. Trying to address potential conflicts of interest and minimize them should not be a problem. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. What has your experience been getting help when you've hit a plateau? What would you like to learn through this podcast that would give you the support you need? Let's continue the discussion, connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter, and please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious. I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.